It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean Davis.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
Government shutdown is over, so let's do this. How you doing, Will?
So, this weekend, friend of the podcast, Elisa Vahan, had her 27th birthday party.
You mean her 23rd birthday party.
Her 23rd birthday party for the fourth time.
Yeah.
And we went down to some horrible bar in Santa Monica. We did like bar hopping in Santa Monica. And we went to this horrible bar. It was like the last bar the night we stopped at. It was like the basement or something.
No.
There's a whole bunch of guys in these V-neck shirts giving me stink eye all night.
That's your scene.
That's my scene.
Yeah, basement's full of men.
So we go there, and due to some weird circumstances, these guys thought I was cutting the line when really I was trying to get the fuck out of there. And this guy stops me and goes, "Hey, 5'6", no cuts." And I didn't understand that this was an insult to my height, mostly because I'm actually 5'5". He was giving me an inch, so it didn't register. Well, Elisa Vahan went insane and started screaming at this guy in my defense.
Now, she was sober, right?
Yeah, on her birthday, around 1 in the morning, she was stone cold sober.
Right.
And then he called her, he said, "Whatever, 5'7" with lipstick." So clearly this guy just says, he estimates people's heights and uses it in an insult.
Well, works at a carnival.
So I went insane when I realized it was an insult. Then he insulted her, and a slew of profanities. I went crazy. I was going to fight this guy, but somebody got in between us. And then I threatened to burn down the whole bar, and I stormed out.
So we're not going to the basement.
We're
this
not
weekend.
Going to the basement.
Okay.
It was not a good scene. So that's
Finn
how I'm doing.
Finn McCool's for us.
Finn McCool's we'll go to instead.
Can't take you anywhere.
So what's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
Well, just same. Continue to like us on Facebook. Give us a star rating on iTunes. Leave a note and spread the love.
I don't know what's so hard about this star rating thing. It's easy. You click it. It's done.
Yeah.
You're a bunch of assholes.
It's like sex.
And anything else with
some
of our
and
past
I just
guests?
Want to remind people that Christy Morales will be performing at Taboo Tales on October 23rd, and I highly recommend at the Mocha Theater. Matcha Theater on Kings Road.
I have trouble saying it. I know where it is, though.
West Hollywood. Just go get your tickets because it's going to sell out. There's only 99 seats, and the bitch ain't one. do that, October 23rd. And just want to remind everyone, Dylan Brody's book, Laughs Last, is still available on Amazon. It is not sold out yet. So pick up a copy. And Alex Stein's book, No Mr. Bond, I Expect Your Dreams to Die. Both excellent, excellent reads. Support local artists.
And who's our sponsor this week?
Well, Will, this week's episode is brought to you by my apartment building stupid management company and the stupid plumbers that have arbitrarily decided to choose this week to tear up all the drywall in my room so they can access the rusted out galvanized steel pipes in order to replace them with brand spanking new copper ones. Meanwhile, I have to shower my brothers and poop at Starbucks like a hobo. Stupid fucking plumbers.
The hobo pooping is never good.
I feel like a displaced person, like I'm a refugee. It's awful. Also, my brother, wonderful person, very generous. They got to get the hot water fixed in the upstairs shower. Just saying.
On the show today, television deals with death once again. Captain Phillips, hero or just some asshole? And I got a bone to pick with reality TV, but not for the reason you might think. But first, we're very excited to have with us today the very funny Sharon Houston.
Hi, you guys.
And this is actually Sharon Houston. You're here.
I'm cracking up at your intro. I would be so angry if I couldn't shower in my own place. And first
it's
of all,
not even
how,
a shower, it's the bathroom.
How is Will not Jewish? That's what's funny to me. Like, we were talking earlier, and he's like, "Oh, I'm not Jewish, but Sean is."
I'm Jew, and I'm like, and he's Jewish.
Yeah, but you're not. No. It's
I know,
crazy.
Everybody. I did a reading. I did the show, quote-unquote, the other night, very last-minute thing. I was filling in for somebody, and afterwards, the one of the women who had read, she got up on stage after she saw me, and she was like, you are Jewish. Someone has lied to you at some point in your life, because you are clearly Jewish.
Well, what is your lineage? What is your
my mother's side of the family is all Italian, and my father's is, like, Irish and Greek.
So he's got the guilt and the Mediterranean, so
right,
that's
right,
why
right. So that's why it all, yeah.
You're, like, roundabout Jewish. You got all the pieces, but there's just something missing. The bloodline's missing.
Right.
Almost there.
You're almost there.
Well, speaking of almost...
Yes.
We almost had you on a couple of times.
I know, because I'm a fucking hot mess.
You have become like our white whale, in a way.
Well, yeah, and here I am. And here I am, here in North Hollywood.
Yep, double
drinking
fisting
Fireball.
Cocktails.
I'm double fisting bourbon, or whiskey. I have Jack Daniels in one glass and Fireball.
But it's not your fault. Someone tragically died on the freeway tonight, causing you to be late, aggravating your evening, therefore...
I just wanted somebody to take the edge off, because I get so annoyed with the 101 and the 17. Like, it's never difficult to come to North Hollywood. It's like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And tonight, it was 1 hour and 10 minutes.
Welcome to my sex life.
Oh.
Oh, so
sorry.
Sad. But welcome. We're so glad that you're finally here.
I'm so happy to be here.
And it's interesting, because you're dealing with a lot of pain in this way up here. And so the first time I saw you perform, and this was when I was also getting into kind of first doing storytelling and essay shows and stuff, and I saw you at Tattletales, which is
that
where
we met.
That
was when you first started?
That was
really?
The first time I did it. Yeah.
You're fucking kidding me.
I swear to God.
I wouldn't believe that.
It was first
you
time.
You seem like a professional. Honest
well,
to God.
That was literally the first time.
Wow.
And you then and I told a very good essay story, but it was about someone cheating on you.
In the most disgusting, deliberate way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was making me think about how, though, these horrible things happen. Yes, I was stuck in traffic, but it somehow makes the rest of the evening funnier. You're able to use that somehow for, yes, someone cheated on me, but I have material.
Well, yeah, but it took me a long time to get there. I mean, okay. because of the fact that they were there two... What was really most disturbing about the whole event wasn't so much the cheating, but the fact that, like, when I broke up with him, he never came home again. I never saw him again. I never saw him again. It happened, actually, 3.5-4 years ago, and I actually saw him crossing the street recently. And
did you gun it?
No, I didn't. I was at a stoplight, and what's so funny is I see this guy crossing the street, and I'm not, like, this is going to make me sound like such a cunt, but I'm, you know, I see this guy crossing the street, and I go, oh, my God, look at this fat fuck. Like, he looked like Alfred Hitchcock walking into,
it was like
into the screen.
Like Psycho.
Yeah, totally. It was like this gut's coming, and I think he's going to turn front and go, hello, I'm going to tell you a story. But, like, this gut, and I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. And then I went, oh, my God, that's my ex. So I started texting friends that worked with him, and I was like, you're not going to believe who I just saw. He's gigantic. And then one of my friends texted me back and goes, oh, yeah, they make fat jokes about him all day at work.
It must have made you feel just a little bit better.
It made me feel amazing.
There you go.
This is what happens when you cheat on Chinese and you balloon out
you
of
balloon.
Type 2 diabetes, people.
That's right. You turn into a disgusting fat fuck.
I've always been... If I was ever cheated on, I'm not aware of it. But there's one girl I dated that I think she might have cheated on me, but there was no evidence. But
your intuition's never wrong.
Okay, so then that girl cheated on me. I wasn't sure whether she was cheating on me or just doing lots of cocaine behind my back.
Well, maybe the cocaine was her lover.
That could have been. That could have been. Yeah. She cheated on me with cocaine. I've always been on good terms with my exes. But the only one that I'm on bad terms with is a girl who just decided to stop calling me after dating for months. She's like, this is how I'll end it. And then she had the nerve to come to Sardo's knowing where I'd be hanging out. And when I confronted her about this there, she said, I don't want to talk about this. I said, well, this is the only thing we're talking about. And I proceeded to talk about it until she left the bar.
Good, fuck her.
But she still took her
the
bucks.
The only thing she had to say to you was, you know what, Will? It's not working out. I need to move on. Just be fucking honest with people.
Exactly.
It's not that hard.
But you know what? It's one of those weird things, like, in retrospect, like, I'm writing a piece on that now, and I in retrospect, like, these horrible... Like, do you look back at sometimes horrible things as being like, oh, I could use this?
Well, you have no choice but to use it, and that's why we're lucky that we're artists. Most people, they use it by going to therapy and talking it out and then taking antidepressants, but we're lucky...
You could do that, too.
No. I do talk to a therapist, but I'm not on any antidepressants. I was actually nervous about going to see a therapist when I first started going to therapy because I thought she was going to say, you need to be on something, because I didn't want to be on anything. And she was like, no, you don't need to be on anything. You're not depressed. You're a normal person and you have normal feelings. Like, you're not irrational. You're not super high, super down. You know, you're just thinking about things and processing them like a normal person would. But I think that, you know, all you have to do, I just feel like the way that I treat people, I feel like I owe them the consideration of saying, hey, this is how I'm feeling, so I think I'm going to move on. Or this is how I'm feeling, so this is why I want to stay. Or whatever it is. You know, even when someone invites you to a birthday party, if you can't go, I always respond and say, I'm so sorry I can't make it because I have this obligation.
Give a reason.
Give a reason. It's just common decency. And I feel like that's what's lacking.
I'm going on safari. Yeah, I'm going to be on safari.
I'm going to be on safari all day. I can't come
I'm
to your party.
Big game on the Serengeti.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant like the website. I was like, oh, the browser. Yes,
no,
I'm going to be on
actually,
safari
no,
Googling
like
things all night.
Teddy Roosevelt.
The fireball's kicking in, you guys.
Oh, really?
I'm
well,
happy.
We should start asking some questions then.
Yes.
Well,
I'm excited to talk about the topics, but go.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about you here, because you are involved in a lot of things, and one thing that really interests me is you've done a lot of work on hidden camera shows.
Correct.
Like, for example, we were talking about Punk'd before.
Well, yeah, my first hidden, and I'm doing air quotes while I say hidden, listeners, show was a show called Con on Comedy Central, but the cameras were exposed, it's just the people didn't know they were on a show that wasn't real, that we were fucking with them. So that was my first one. Terrible experience. So the casting director from Punk'd called me, and she's always asking me to come in, and I'm like, I don't want to be on Punk'd. And she called me, and I was like, I don't want to be on Punk'd. And she said, please, as a favor to me, because we're friends. And I said, okay. And then I ended up booking it, and I was like, what do I do? So I called my friend Adam, who's a producer and a comedian as well, and I was like, what do I do? Because I had this sweet producing job where I was making a ton of money, and I was hanging out with hip-hop artists, and I'm like a huge hip-hop head, even though I don't look like it. And I was like, what do I do? He goes, you need to take the job on Punk'd. I was like, all right, fine. It ended up being a great experience. And then I developed a really great relationship with the executive producer, Billy Rainey, and he's hired me for several pilots that he's done. I just completed a series for him for Oxygen. So I've done... and I did one with Eva Longoria. Like, I think I've done about 12 hidden camera shows.
Wow.
Yeah. Can the market sustain 12 hidden camera shows?
It can sustain a shit ton. And what's interesting is a lot of people thought I would be too recognizable to do other hidden camera shows. No one recognizes me from TV. I look very different on television than I do in real life. I'm also extremely petite, short and petite. But on TV, I look like a normal-sized human being. I look like I'm 5'5".
Okay, so then they see you and they're like...
They see me in real life. They have no idea who I am.
Interesting.
Well, here's my question with this. How much on these hidden camera shows is... Like, I mean, do you... How much of it is real? Like, I mean, I guess, like... Are there contingency plans? Like, what if the mark figures it out too soon?
Okay,
like,
so here's what they do. What they do is when they do the budget for a hidden camera show, let's say you have 13 episodes and you know you're doing 2 bits per episode. So that's 26 bits. What you do is you actually budget for like 32 bits because you know you have to have a kill rate because you know that at some point, it's possible that the mark will figure it out and go, fuck you, this is a hidden camera show, I'm out of here.
Or someone will blow it, or someone will...
Or someone will blow it. So that's how you ensure that you have, you know, real bits that make it to air.
Have you been involved in some that really went south?
Mm-hmm.
That really went...
I certainly have. I was at one with Punk'd. We Punk'd Christina Milian.
Okay.
And her mother... And first of all, Christina's Cuban, I'm Cuban, so I had a feeling this was going to happen. They didn't tell her mom. Her mom's her manager. She's a total momager, and she's like, Cubiche, like, let me tell you, you gotta tell me everything or you can go fuck yourself. And that's exactly what happened. We Punk'd her. She thought she was there for a Maybelline shoot. And we Punk'd her, and then her mother was like, you can't use this, I'm not signing a release, she's not signing a release, fuck you. So that was gone.
Oh, shit.
So I heard about the A-Rod one on Punk'd also did make it to air. Because his people wouldn't let him sign the release.
That's true. That happens.
Because it was right before he signed the big contract with the Yankees, and they were trying to...
Because he was still a Ranger at the time.
Yeah, they were trying to super manage his image, and he didn't
well,
come off well in the
problem post- with his whole career is trying to super manage his image, and it never works for him.
So, yeah, he wouldn't sign
he
the release
so
on that
phony
one.
All the
well,
time.
That's the thing. Sports, I think, this is what's hard. Athletes, hip-hop artists are really hard to Punk'd because they don't want to be clowned.
Yeah.
And you know you have to Punk'd people that are like, you
like
know,
Seth Green,
like Seth Green, like you know hipster actors or like Disney actors that want to go to the next level. Like those are the people you want to Punk'd because they're the ones that are going to be like, oh my god, I just got Punk'd.
Did they ever Punk'd Ashton? Have they ever?
No.
Have they ever tried? Has there ever
you
been?
Can't.
He's unpunkable.
He's
really,
unpunkable.
That would be a special if they could. Somehow get his people.
Special dramatic hour.
It would be impossible. Punk'd. Not only that, like, I don't think anybody would want to do it to him.
Israeli
because,
snipers.
Well, he's such a nice guy.
Doesn't matter. Gotta
yeah.
Punk'd him.
No, I don't think. He's been so generous and kind and thoughtful to everyone who's ever worked with him or for him that I don't think anybody would even try to Punk'd him. Not even out of love, they wouldn't try to Punk'd him because he's such a great guy.
So you have a new show that's going to be, I think you said, in January?
On Oxygen. It's called Celebrities Undercover, and it's where celebrities put on prosthetics, and then they pull over pranks on their fans and friends.
This is like the Jewel karaoke bit that went online.
Yes, it totally is like that. Actually, what's funny is that it was a pilot that I did for E! 4 years ago.
Okay.
Thank God I don't age, because it was 4 years ago, and I get a call from Billy. He's like, I'm doing this show for Oxygen. You're not going to believe what it's called. What is it? It's called Secret Celebrity. Originally, it was called Secret Celebrity. And I was like, okay. He goes, and guess which bit they're keeping from the pilot? What? Kim Kardashian. Oh, great, because I did this thing with Kim Kardashian. So
I was shocked Kim Kardashian was involved with an E! Production.
Well, I know. Well, yeah. It was originally a pilot for E!, and then E! Passed on it for a series, and then once the production company who created the show got the rights back, they cut a sizzle and sold it to Oxygen.
Okay.
So the only bit from the pilot that's staying in is the Kim Kardashian one. So then we did some with other... And you know what we did? We used some really big celebrities, a lot of reality stars, because that's Oxygen's demo. I was expecting them to be awful and a nightmare. And everyone was lovely. I was so pleasantly surprised. So I'm the girl that helps facilitate all the pranks.
Okay.
Because the actors, you know, the celebrities, even though they were in full prosthetics, some of them had very distinct voices, so you couldn't, like, no matter what you did to them physically, people were going to make them.
So Chris Rock in
No, not Chris Rock.
Prosthetics.
But you know what? You're close. I can't say who's on the show, but you're close. With
Tony Rock.
No, not Tony Rock. It's a very famous black actor who is very visible, who's on a series, who has had many different, or I shouldn't say many different careers, two different careers.
And if you just keep throwing out things, we're just going to keep guessing.
I'm just saying, like, that we had some pretty decent stars,
Prince.
But, like, if they had said one word, boom, we'd make them. You know what I mean? So you had to, like, they had to be very quiet, and I had to do all the...
Well, now I think all our listeners are going to tune in just to find out which actor
you
we're
can't watch about. Oxygen. You're not a middle-aged woman.
Well, listen, you don't have mashed potato arms. You don't live in Kansas. You're not going to watch it.
Well, we'll get you a cat if you want.
We could do that.
Yeah.
We can hang
a clothesline in your apartment. You can hang your clothes.
If we start doing little things like that, maybe by January I'll be the kind of person who can watch The Oxygen. But you also are involved. You've worked in a lot of daytime court TV.
I produce a lot of television, but daytime court TV is kind of like my unemployment office. So if like a running gun show isn't staffing, I always get a job on a court show. And I have a podcast about it called Daytime Justice that's on iTunes and Stitcher. And it's a terrible, terrible way to make a living.
Dealing with small claims court?
Pardon?
Small claims court? Or
yes, it's small. It's all small claims cases.
Well, let me ask you this question. How real is that? I mean...
Oh, it's very real, because what we do is we pull claims that have already been filed.
It's actually, okay. Yeah, then instead of... So the judge basically acts as an arbitrator.
Correct.
I know someone that their small claim was pulled. They went on Judge Judy.
Yes.
And Judge Judy screamed at both of them, but she was found... not guilty, and the show then paid whatever damages.
There's no guilty or non-guilty verdict
in
small claims. Right,
yeah.
Correct. So you find them at fault, and then you award a judgment.
Right.
So does the show pay, though, the judgment?
And that's the incentive, because the thing is, this is what a lot of people don't know.
This makes a lot more sense now.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the thing. Let's say, like, your landlord... Okay, I'm going to tell you something about what you're going through right now. If you want to, and I know California state law, as far as like landlord-tenant laws, what you can do right now is take your rent and put it in an escrow account. Then you take your landlord to court, you will win, and the judge will say, all that money you put into escrow, that's yours. Fuck that guy. Because of what you're going through right now with your apartment. But if you were to like to sue, let's say you and Will got into an argument, he hit your car, you know, it was $300 worth of damage, he didn't want to pay for it, and he said, fuck you, you're like, I'm going to sue you. You can win, but good luck collecting. So that's why these daytime court shows are so great, because we guarantee the settlement if they win, and then you don't have to, because like, I think it varies state by state, but pretty much, you know, for most states, it's like, you win your case. Okay, if 45 days pass and Will doesn't pay you, you have to go back to court, fill all this fucking paperwork, and say, okay, I'm going to try to garnish your wages. Well, what if Will is an asshole who never keeps a real job, which are most people that are defendants don't have jobs.
Which is very close to my reality.
Don't hit my car.
Let me tell
you
what.
We're going to fight over podcast royalties.
I'm also the kind of asshole who would try to keep someone in court for years.
You would just bleak house them?
Well, you could do that, too, because, like, you get, like, in small claims, they'll let you file for two continuances. Like, I need a continuance because I'm not ready. Okay. Then you go back again, and you can just send a letter.
I did that once with a speeding ticket. I ended up postponing the thing multiple times till it was like a year and a half later. Cop didn't show. I won.
Really?
Yeah. This was back on Long Island.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Back with the Wild Wild East.
This is why I fight everything. I've never paid a ticket.
I have two pending.
I bought them all.
I pay tickets.
No, I do trial by declaration, which is the passive aggressive way to fight tickets, where you put in a written statement of what happens, and instead of the cop having to show up to court and getting paid overtime, they now are forced to sit down and on their own dime write a written account of what they recall happened. And if they don't write it, mistrial, you get your money back.
Oh, wow. See, what I do is I just call somebody that I know and go, do you know any cops? And they go, yeah. And I go, okay, how do I get around this? Because that happened to me, but I got around it because I knew a cop.
Now, your Daytime Justice podcast, I mean, I listened to a few of them. I mean, you talk to people who did, like, polygraphs and, PIs, a lot of interesting people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because it's, you know what, I started to get bored with, like, I can only interview so many judges that have been on court shows. I can only interview so many producers. And I was like, what can I do? And I was like, oh, I found this polygraph guy. I just started tweeting people and going, like, who's in the criminal world? Because I have a lot of, like I have a lot of detectives that listen to here's the thing. My podcast is very niche. So, and even though I'm a stand-up comic, I don't really, it's not like comedy podcast.
Yeah, that was the thing that surprised me when I listened to it, because I saw you very funny. I watched some of your bits very funny, and then I'm like, oh, this podcast is very interesting.
Yeah,
not necessarily a laugh
but
riot.
From a right, no, it's not a laugh riot. It's more from a legal standpoint. Like, I had
more
this
like
woman,
a riot riot.
It's more like a riot riot. I had this woman, Terry, God, what's her last name? I think it's Grossman. I'm a little drunk. Terry, her son is on death row. And he was found guilty of something he didn't do. But then they got the verdict was overturned. But they're still fighting to get him out of solitary confinement. So I had her on the show. Like, I just found interesting crime stories because I realized most of my audience, they were lost. Like, people that tweet me and email me, they're law students, they're judges, they're attorneys. And I'm like, well, I need to serve that demo.
Now, before we move on to topics, though, I wanted to mention, I saw that your most recent episode, though, was about people on strike. It was about the
Yes, because I wanted to know what the legalities were, and I wanted to talk to them about, like, do you feel like you're never going to work again? Like, what is the WGA doing to protect you, and, like, what
well,
is the legal...
For listeners who might not know...
Who don't follow fashion police?
Well, no, but the... Or aren't keeping up on, like, Deadline Hollywood and articles like that. I know a little bit about this, too.
Told ya.
Because I actually...
Told ya.
Yeah.
Nikki Fink. I love her.
Yeah. No one knows who she is.
She doesn't give a fuck.
She's a 14-year-old boy.
No, she's a fucking woman.
Out of North Korea.
I love her.
Well, the writers on the show Fashion Police, they... not all of them, right?
It's no,
not,
all
oh,
of them.
All of them did.
Yes.
Okay, maybe I didn't know that. But they all went on
strike.
I'm sorry,
all but the head writer, who I posted a picture of on my Tumblr,
maybe
naked.
Maybe that's why.
Tony Tripoli.
Italian.
They all...
I'm getting a look.
They all went on strike because they weren't getting... They were doing a lot of these award season shows, a lot of these extras.
I did one. I worked
making...
on one. It was a nightmare. I worked a 24-hour shift. I got paid $500.
Well, because there's a really short turnaround on that because the award show will be that night and then the
well,
show
Well, no, what they do is...
Day.
Well, actually, what they do is they... what you do is you stay... You go to the E! Offices and then you watch the red carpet. So you don't watch the award show. You just watch the red carpet to look at the outfits and then you just start writing jokes. And then you pitch and Tony goes, yes, 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 no, 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 no. And then... You literally have 2 hours, you write, you pitch. 2 hours, write, pitch. They gave us a fucking shitty crudité platter from Pavilions and some Sun Chips. Like, I had to bring my own food. There was no coffee going. Like, and
this sounds very E. Or certainly very E since
but it's not though,
NBC Universal.
But it's not, though, because I can tell you, I have a lot of friends that work on Chelsea lately, and they're treated extremely well.
They're in a different building, in a different place.
But they didn't used to be. They used to be in West LA, now they're in Burbank, but like, you know, it's not like they were any different than Fashion Police. I mean, it was a real legit show, and they were treated well.
And these writers, these writers had enough of this. They want to be in the WGA, they want to be recognized with the they went on strike.
Well, they want to be paid what they should be paid.
Yeah, they're not getting paid, right? And what's annoying about it is that Joan Rivers is a WGA member.
And she lost her shit. I mean, if you listen to the episode, she lost her shit on the writers when they said, hey, we want to be in the guild. The thing is like my friend Nadia wrote on Fashion Police for several years. She had to keep her cocktail waitressing job at the Cha-Cha Lounge while she's writing on Fashion Police, $500 a week. They'll call you at 5 in the morning and go, Joan wants 30 more jokes from each writer. So you got to stop what you're doing and write fucking jokes about these stupid fucking outfits and deliver them. And you're getting paid $500 a week, but you're working like weird hours. You're working a 40-hour work week. You're writing jokes for her. She owns those jokes when she writes them. So if there's a joke there that's kind of evergreen that she can do in her act, she'll take it. It's not fair. Like, they should have been treated fairly.
And I remember they did a big... There was a big rally outside the E building.
Yep.
I saw that. Maybe I'll get into some
of
that.
Oh, but here's
later.
What happened with Nadia. Is Nadia asked for a raise. She was making $500 a week. All she wanted was, like, $700. And Joan said, okay. 2 weeks later, she was fired.
Jesus. This is no good. Well...
I got nothing on any of this, so...
It's
a bummer because I love Joan Rivers. Like, I've met her twice. She couldn't have been nicer.
She's been around for 65 years.
She's selling my copy of Enter Talking. And, she couldn't... I went to her roast, the Comedy Central roast. Like, I begged my old boss, who's friends with Doug Herzog. I'm like, please get me tickets to the VIP after party. Please, I'm begging you. And he did. And, it was one of the greatest moments of my life. And then... But she surrounds herself with this crazy... This... Not crazy, but this... guy who's whatever. Anyway.
Well, look.
A lot of inside baseball here.
A lot of inside baseball, but it's interesting stuff, and you should... Well, no, I'm just as responsible for that. We'll talk more when this show's over. But,
I'm drunk. Go ahead.
I want to move on to the topics. Before we do, what if people want to listen to this striking Fashion Police episode? What if they want to know more about you? Where can they go? How can they find
you? You can go to www.iamsharonhouston.com, and there you can link to my... if you go in the front page, there's all these icons. If you click on the icon that says iTunes, you'll get to the podcast. The Fashion Police writer episode is the most recent podcast that I've uploaded. And I've got one that I recorded with Joey Greco, the host of Cheaters, that I need to edit and upload.
Greatest episode of Cheaters is when Joey Greco gets stabbed.
He wouldn't even talk about it with me. But the thing is, I wouldn't, because everybody talks to him about that, and I'm like,
yeah.
I just want to hear about, how do you feel about fidelity? But anyway, he's awesome. I love Joey. We've become friends, and we drink together at El Coyote. But, so you can go to my website, click on any of the icons at the bottom, the Instagram, follow me on Instagram, you can follow me on Twitter, you can follow me on iTunes, so www.iamsharonhouston.com, and, tomorrow night I'm at the Ice House in when is this uploaded?
This probably won't be up until the weekend.
Goes up to the weekend, yeah.
Until the weekend? Okay, great. November 12th, come see me at R Bar. Great comedy show called Blam 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 at 9 p.m. And then October 23rd, 24th, 25th, I'm performing on all the Comedy Juice shows. One's in Irvine, one's in Hollywood, one's in Pasadena. So just go to my website. I have all the information there.
Excellent.
And go to her website, and you'll know how to follow her from there and find out more about all this stuff. IamSharonHouston.com. And if you are a good listener of the podcast, you have already done this, because we will have a link to it on our Facebook page.
Yay!
Which you have all liked multiple times over.
So let's get to some of these topics. And this week, one of the big TV things, or last week I should say, Glee did their episode about the death of Corey Monty.
Right.
You watch Glee?
I refuse.
You refuse.
Well, that's not true. I love Jane Lynch, but
she's
hysterical. Yeah, she's amazing. But I don't watch a lot of Glee because I can't stand the singing and the shit.
It becomes a bit much.
It's
too
much.
Well, that's what the show's all about. So if you don't
like
that,
I'm not. Listen, I was. Yeah, I can't.
Well, I watched this episode because...
Like you do all of them.
Because I have to watch this thing. Because I started watching this show like an idiot, and I have to see things. I have to see things through. And believe me, it's been rough. But. You know, I was curious about this one. It was interesting because it felt very much... You were very much aware of... You were watching not only the characters, but you were watching Friends. And in
you were
the
watching
case of,
Friends?
No, not Friends, the TV show, but like Friends of
Friends.
Corey Monty.
Oh, okay.
Friends mourning the loss of someone they cared about. And Lea Michele was kind of held to two-quarters of the way through the episode. She didn't show up until kind of towards the end.
So they emotionally manipulated you.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much. What was frustrating about the episode was they never on the episode said how the character Finn died.
Oh, really?
They never mentioned it. In fact, there's one line of, like, people are going to talk about how he died, but I don't. We're not going to talk about
okay,
that.
Okay, so how do you feel about that, though?
Autoerotic asphyxiation. That's what I think.
Well, about it is like, because I think that's unfortunate. I think that's a really bad plot.
But don't you think it's kind of like a bias that Hollywood has? Because there's so many alcoholics. And here I am, drunk, talking about this. But there's so many...
You don't have to finish that, by
the way. I'm not going to because I have to drive home. But here... No, no, don't take it away.
here's the thing.
No, there's so many alcoholics and so many people in recovery and drug recovery and stuff. I wonder if there's, a certain bias towards, oh, we feel this sympathy. I feel like there's a bigger response... Oh, my God, people are going to hate me for saying this, because he died of a drug overdose than if he had died from, cancer or,
Well, I don't remember this happening with Heath Ledger.
Right? That's true.
Yeah, well,
he earned that Oscar.
And, listen, he was on a popular-ish television show. Had he done much else beyond that?
Not really.
Yeah. So. But, I feel terrible.
Addiction's
terrible. It's a fucking tragedy. It's awful.
Well, but just from a pure plot point wise, I'm like, don't you have to tell us how a main character? Because clearly the end game for this show is
couldn't they have had him die of a car accident or something
like that?
Like what high school kids die of?
These
autoerotic asphyxiation.
Right.
Sticking by it. Well, maybe they felt like that. It was so, It was so loaded with metatextual context that they didn't want to overburden the episode. The problem is, how's it going to play 5-10 years from now?
Because also, clearly the end game of the show was going to be that Finn and Rachel would be together.
Not
and
anymore.
And guess what? Not going to happen.
I know,
Rachel's
and it's
gonna
so, dude, it's so tragic. It's terrible.
Well, this got me thinking about other shows that have had to deal with the death of a guy. Spartacus had to deal with the death of...
Liam McIntyre.
And they recast.
Yeah, and you know what? They made the best out of the situation, and they brought the show in, and... It's a brilliant show, and it's a little jarring, but you know what? He takes him a couple episodes, but he completely owns the role.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, when Andy Whitfield died,
But, let's say a show let's say, God forbid, Jon Hamm died in a car accident tonight. They would just have to end Mad Men, right? You couldn't go on.
You couldn't go on without Jon Hamm.
You can't recast it.
No.
And nobody wants to watch the Pete Campbell show.
So I would watch the Sterling.
I would watch a spinoff of the Pete Campbell
Sterling's
show.
Gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. This is Roger Sterling in the 70s.
That would be amazing.
That would actually be pretty good.
Yeah.
But
well, if Cranston had died,
you guys
no
should register
Bad.
That with the WGA right now, so someone
Storm Rivers will hear it.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking about that. Certain shows just would have to end.
Yeah.
I guess if it's a supporting character, I think one show that handled the death really well was News Radio, when Phil Hartman died.
Yes, I thought they handled that extremely well.
What on Cheers, when Coach died.
When Coach died,
he
handled
died between
that.
Seasons, and so they just started with Coach died.
Right, and then Woody Harrelson came in.
Yeah.
And I think Phil Hartman died between seasons. Am I making that up?
I don't remember.
But I remember then they had, they acknowledged
that. God, I miss that guy. He was so fucking funny.
Phil Hartman,
It's so funny, as a comic, when I see, other stand-up comics that are really brilliant, and they're with these bimbos that are clearly star fuckers. I'm like, dude.
I want to be a star fucker.
No. I just go, don't, that's bad news. That's going to lead you to a very, very dark place.
You're going to get Hartman.
Yeah, you're going to get Hartman.
Well, another mix of reality and, real tragedy and what am I trying to say?
Fiction.
This is a terrible transition.
This is no good. Keep going. I'm going to just, let's see what's
going on. I think it's good. I don't even know what's coming up.
This week, Captain Phillips came.
Oh, yeah.
Now you know.
I know you haven't gotten a chance to see it yet.
I didn't see it, but I did read everything about him.
Well,
not everything, but everything that was on the interwebs.
First, Sean, address the film itself.
The film is a slightly condensed version of the events, and it's very documentary in style. I have not seen United 93, but it's by the same director, Paul Greengrass.
Oh, wow.
And United 93 is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's great.
He takes his shaky camera onto the Maersk, Alabama, and there's one establishing scene with Tom Hanks and mystery wife Catherine Keener, who... then disappears the rest of the movie.
She's my favorite actress ever.
She's in it for 90 seconds. So then we're just with him, and he's very workmanlike. We just kind of see him going about the business of taking the ship out. We quickly cut to Somalia to see these kids getting recruited, and they're essentially kids.
Yeah,
and then
they're 18 or something like that.
Yeah, then we follow the course of the hijacking and the subsequent lifeboat, I don't even know what to call it, the lifeboat,
Hostage situation,
and then how it all ends up.
Basically, the Somalia pirates who captured Captain Phillips.
Yes. Right, but according to the book, there was a lot of stuff that happened prior to him going on the lifeboat.
They were on the boat for a while. He manages to, I think the actual...
It was five days.
So in the movie, the whole thing feels like it happens in about 48 hours. They tend to condense the time.
Which is the nature of cinema.
Well, you don't want to sit and watch Tom Hanks just stare at the Somalians for 2.5 hours.
Well, the thing is, it's like, how do you chronicle 5 days? You know what I mean? Like day four, day three, day two, day one.
I thought the film was really thrilling.
Especially when that tiger showed up on the...
Richard Pye. That was Life of Pi. Yeah.
But also, I thought they did a good job, and Paul Greengrass does a similar thing with United 93, where obviously does not justify the actions of the Somalian pirates, but humanizes them in a way. Like, these people were
desperate. That's interesting,
people.
Because like all the stuff I read on the internet, the Somalians felt like they weren't humanized in that film.
Well, I disagree, but then again, I'm not...
There were a lot
Somalian.
Of lines in the movie that are very on the nose. There's a couple of points in the movie where just the... I don't want to say the mission statement of the movie, but the themes come right to the front where, you know, Tom Hanks asked the pirates, couldn't you do anything, you know, other than this?
Maybe in America.
But not
maybe
in Somalia.
In
there's a lot of that.
So they made it seem like, well, we have no other choice.
Yeah, it's kind of, when they do open their mouths, it's a little preachy.
Mm. But now, here's the thing. This is based on a true story. But the question that's
whose story is true?
Exactly, because the question now is, was Captain Phillips really this heroic? Because the crew...
The crew says, fuck that dude.
They hate him.
They fucking hate him.
Well, because Tom Hanks isn't playing them in the movie.
Well, it's not... I don't think that's what... I think they hated him before the movie was made.
Oh, is he just a prick?
No, because they read the book and they were like, this is not true. This is not what happened.
They feel he's like self-righteous.
Correct. He's building himself up to be this hero and he really wasn't. They're like, that didn't happen and this didn't happen and that's not what he said. Hmm. So he's making himself to be this, you know, strong guy that like saved the ship and...
Also, the crew is claiming that he put them in danger by
ignoring
seven warnings to avoid the Somalia coast.
Yes.
And there is a moment in the film where the crew is basically, after a botched pirate attack before the pirates come back, where the crew's basically like, let's get the hell out of there. He's like, no, we're staying the course. And the crew's like, we're union guys. We're not going to fight pirates.
Well, that's
and
the
there's
thing.
No guns on board.
It was common knowledge in those waters to say 600 miles away from the coast, not 300. And then this Captain Phillips guy was like, yeah, fuck you. I'm going to stop my fucking ride this 300. And they were like, please don't. We're going to get killed by pirates. And then that's what happened.
So if it weren't for Captain Phillips, they might
none
not
of this would have happened.
So my question is this. Real Captain Phillips might be a bit of a fuck-up.
Right.
Tom Hanks' Captain Phillips, a hero. In the grand scheme of creating a film or art, does it matter? Does this matter? Because the movie's a really good thing from does
okay.
it matter?
Yes, it does. And let me tell you why. Okay, let's say something really tragic happened to you, and you were like in the desert, and some fucking crazy shit went down, and then somebody writes a book and goes, I was the hero, but you were the actual hero, or you were warning the hero, don't fucking go across this desert because we're going to be fucked. And then he goes, yeah, no, we have to keep crossing this desert. And then you guys get attacked by camels or whatever. And then I'm making things up. But what I'm saying is, like, what if you were that person that was there and you knew it wasn't a true story? And then this guy makes a ton of money selling his story that's all bullshit. And the guy was a pussy and put everybody in danger. I would be livid.
I can't wait till we're in the desert attacked by camels and I publish the account. The truth.
About how you saved
everybody. The Chronicles. Yes.
But really what happened was Will saved you from fucking camels.
Well, here's what my issue is that what's going to end up happening is that the popular form of the story will become the remembered form of the story,
mm-hmm.
and that will get enshrined as the of what happened. Think, for example, so Dog Day Afternoon, for example, is based on an actual case. Do you
one
know
my,
any,
right, right, right. One of my favorite movies.
Do you know anything about the real case of the real people?
No.
Very little.
That, very little.
So the people who that story was based on probably have some bones to pick with the movie.
But what was the movie that Spike Lee made that was about a bank takeover that was similar to Dog Day
the
Afternoon?
Inside Man.
Yeah. I heard that was very, very true to what happened.
Okay, but he never put that out there as based on a true story.
That's
he didn't
true,
try to make
true.
It. And the problem with Paul Greengrass is he has this documentary-esque style.
Which adds something to the reality.
This
verisimilitude.
And he also has a background as a journalist. His first movie was Bloody Sunday about the... The Irish...
The IRA.
The IRA.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, you know, it's a problem because he's trying to serve two masters, which one is verisimilitude and the other is big-budget Hollywood blockbuster starring you know, America's sweetheart,
right.
Tom Hanks.
He pretty much is, yeah.
I mean, we have this every so often, like, you know, like A Beautiful Mind. I remember there was a big controversy, how much accurate is that?
Right.
We always have these with movies.
Or Social Network, even, is a good
example. Social Network is another one, yeah.
Yeah.
And these are all really good movies,
right.
Is the other thing. So that's why I guess I become torn, because I love them as entertainment.
Right, but
I also am smart enough to not necessarily maybe buy into all of it.
But if you're
going to
say that it's a true story, it's based on a true story, you know, everybody has their own version of what the story. We're storytellers. We have our version of the story. I'm sure that if my ex-boyfriend told a story about what we went through, his story would be totally different from mine.
In his story,
it's all about perspective.
In his story, you're walking past the car and you're fat.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or whatever. Or like I'm the one that like forced him to cheat. Or whatever the fuck. You know
what
I mean?
I heard.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I heard too. But the point is like that. Like everybody has their own perspective. But at the same time, it's like when money's involved, that's when people get pissed. You know, it's like, you're telling this story, that's not what happened, and now you're making money off of it, fuck you.
We've gotten to a weird point, though, with movies, particularly also horror films, where everything's inspired by real ghosts and all that bullshit. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is inspired by actual events. No, it's not. There was no Leatherface. It's just because, like, Ed Gein had a human lampshade, and so did Leatherface. I mean,
right.
It's like little things like that that they take.
I don't know. You know what? I think the other crew members just pissed that they didn't write their own book, and they're not cashing out.
Well, they should have got on that lifeboat then.
Yeah, well, get
they
on.
Well, no, they shouldn't.
The thing is, he just, I
don't know. This guy clearly, okay, let's talk about captains of ships. Remember that guy that drove that Italian cruise ship into the ground and everybody died?
Yeah. It's still there.
And he's like, hey, it's not my fault. I'm a great guy. I think captains are very arrogant, and they think that they can, you know.
Like Captain Kirk, how many times he put his crew in danger?
What a piece of shit that guy was.
But that guy on the cruise ship, you got to go down with the ship. That guy got the hell off
the
ship.
Yeah, he got the hell off the ship.
You gotta, that's the one thing as a captain. You have to go down with the ship.
I heard that's not technically true.
Well, it should be.
No, did you see Titanic?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
It was
a fake movie, but I mean, I love the Titanic. I love it.
Like
I love that movie.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
I think it's great.
Now I'm going to have a stupid song stuck in my head for the whole ride home.
Well, I hate that song, but I love that movie.
I'm a
defender of Titanic.
When that song first came out, we all loved that song.
But like the captain of the ship, you know, there they are, you know, the band playing.
You know who the captain of the ship was? Hugh Bonneville.
No,
not Hugh Bonneville. It's, what's his name? Victor Garber.
No, yeah. He wasn't the captain of the ship.
Yes, he was.
He was the representative from the company.
I thought he was the captain of the ship.
He designed the ship.
Are you sure?
Yeah, the captain of the ship was somebody else.
Richard Attenborough. No, it wasn't Richard
The captain of the ship was played by Bernard Hill, I believe.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Who
you're
also
a
played
genius.
King Theoden in The Two Towers.
Exactly.
And Return of
Victor
the King.
Victor Garber was the guy who designed the ship. That's why he was so distraught that the ship was going down. But
it was the captain's fucking fault.
But, okay, do we give Captain Phillips any credit? Because he did clearly get in a lifeboat with Somali pirates to get them off the ship.
That's true.
That
for five
happen.
Fucking days.
So
which is terrible.
What
and then
Captain
I heard they
Morgan?
Smashed out windows to, like, let air in because it was so fucking hot.
Yeah, that all gets addressed in the movie. And then when he... Listen, go see the movie. It's thrilling. And it's an action movie. The last 5 minutes of the movie, go take it to, like, a completely different place than you're used to seeing an action movie go to. So just it's a phenomenal film. It's not a masterpiece, but it's solid storytelling and filmmaking and acting from beginning to end.
Well, that's all I care about.
Yeah.
I just want solid
and
storytelling.
And lots of gratuitous nudity, though. Like,
really?
Like lots of dick. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
I don't want to see
no,
that.
Yeah. There's no Somali dick in this movie. There's none.
Okay, good. Okay, then I'll watch it.
It's a hard PG-13.
Really? Oh, it's PG-13?
No, it's R. Isn't it R?
Yeah, they had to make those cuts to get the way for the
NC-17.
They had
to make it R because they would have to make it like, you know, like it's violent.
Wait, is it R?
I don't know. I don't care anymore. I'm over 17. I don't care what the movie's rated.
Yeah, I don't care either.
I don't think we have
one for Jumanji, please. Yeah, you know how many tickets for Jumanji I bought in the summer of 94?
How many?
Like 12 to get into every rated R movie that summer.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I was always too scared to do that.
Well, yeah. We'll teach you our ways.
Well, I mean, I'm old enough now, but when I was little, I was scared.
You look 16.
No, I don't. But thank you.
Well, speaking of reality TV. I've bitched a little bit about reality TV on this show before, you know, because, you know, people look at it and they say it's just this awful, vapid entertainment. But here's the problem. Here's the real issue with it. Last week, the romance of the century, Chris and Bruce Jenner.
Oh, God.
22-year marriage. Gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
Fuck her. No prenup.
And Well, believe me, she's the one with the money in that
she's,
thing.
No, they're both. They both have a lot of money.
Yeah. You're on a Wheaties box.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this with reality TV. All the great romances of our life. The Hogans. Marriage ended. John and Kate plus the eight. Done. Even the Osbournes, they were on the rocks. I don't know where their status is now, but they were on the rocks.
Jessica Simpson and Nick Lachey.
Yeah.
One of the pioneers.
I wasn't Britney Spears and some douchebag on a show.
Kevin something or other.
Federline. It's only six episodes, though.
And now, more trouble in the Kardashian family. I know Khloe and Lamar, they've been having trouble. He married her, which drove him to a crack addiction. So, lots of problems. And you want to know what? You want to know why these marriages didn't survive? It's because they're on reality TV.
I don't think that's
these
true.
These would be long, happy marriages.
I disagree.
These people would be married forever.
No.
Until the end of time.
No.
Loving one another.
No.
Completely and utterly without question if it wasn't for reality TV. And that is why this week, you reality television are the enemy of the podcast. Fuck you. You're destroying love.
You're wrong.
You tell me Chris and Bruce wouldn't be married forever if it weren't for the cameras?
Nope. I don't think they would be married forever if it weren't for the... I don't think they would be married forever either in any case.
Fuck you, reality TV.
What about John and Kate plus eight?
I think they would not be married if it... I think they would still end up having a divorce.
I'm being a bit...
Did each one get four kids? Like, how does that work?
I don't know. They did artificial insemination. When you put in an embryo, depending on your age, they'll put in more than one.
Right.
Usually one absorbs the other, so you'll just have one kid. Sometimes they put in four, thinking, oh, they might have twins, but they'll probably all absorb and have one kid, and then all of a sudden they're like,
kid.
I've got three kids in me. So that's science, and who gives a fuck?
Well, I'm being a bit facetious here. I'm being a bit...
No, I know, but...
But, I mean, but maybe there is something, though, too, that, like, if Chris and Bruce Jenner didn't have the pressures of being in the public eye, if they had just
being attention whores, yeah,
quietly, like, let Kim have this career, and they just kind of, you know, stayed home and counted the money, maybe they would still be together.
I don't think so, because I think that the business of reality takes over everything else. Let me tell you, the schedules are very demanding. I'm not surprised that Khloe and Lamar are having difficulty, because it is weird being in the public eye, but, like, Lamar is a fucking basketball player, and for him to do that, plus do the reality show, plus
the crack.
But the thing is I don't even know if he's a crackhead. I don't have a lot of experience with the Kardashians, but I have been around them, and I can tell you right now, Kim is very nice. Chris is lovely. I have very, very, very little experience with them, but, like, they seem like normal people, you know? They definitely seem like business people, and that they were doing this reality thing as a business. Like, they seem to have a very healthy perspective on what they were doing and getting...
That it's a family business.
Like, they got it, that it's a business, and that it's, you know... But they weren't assholes. They were very nice. Because I've dealt with people who are reality show freaks who are assholes, who are like, oh, you know, like I worked with New York, who was she was a character on Flavor of Love, and then she had her own TV show
for like a minute.
Yeah, then there was New York of Love, and then I was a producer on
New
York.
Kept track on his clock.
Totally,
minute.
She was a fucking crazy ass and acted like you know, even when the cameras weren't rolling, she was like, I'm New York, and oh hell no, and I was like, you're a fucking crazy person. The Kardashians didn't behave that way. They knew when the cameras were on, when the cameras were off. Like
they're
very
business oriented.
Correct.
Which is the healthiest way to approach something.
By the way,
agreed. And the thing is that's why I feel like I think maybe Bruce and Chris may have gotten a divorce in any event. I don't think it had to do with the TV show. That's just my perspective. But once again, I've never produced shows for them. I've had very brief. I've had a lot of interaction with Kim, not a lot with Chris, not a lot with Courtney, nothing with Khloe. But like they were all like I saw it and I was like, interesting. They get it.
No, I was just saying that would be a great title for a book called The Business of Reality.
You know what? It would be a great book. Yeah.
Someone's got to write the book about this era of television and reality.
Well, I think Alan Sepinwall should get on it.
No, some people have. Yeah. Some people have.
I guess we'll never know for sure, though.
No.
You know what? I feel like they would have stayed together because it's so... For them to get divorced, it's going to cost them so much money.
Divorces are fucking expensive.
And they are worth over $120 million. Like I said, no prenup. That is... I mean, Kris Jenner's going to be writing him a $75 million check. That's an expensive divorce.
But she's going to continue to create income. So I wouldn't, if I were her, I wouldn't give a shit.
I'm kind of surprised the two young girls haven't gotten their own, like, spin-off, like Growing Up Kardashian, Kendall and Kylie.
Well, they're too young. They got to wait till they're old enough so they can have the cameras on them for enough hours. Because right now they have all the rules.
Because the Coogan accounts and
Oh, yeah,
because
the money, they
got to
wait till they're older because Momager can only get so much and the rest goes in the Coogan account.
Yes.
Once they're 18, though, Momager could take her full cut and the rest goes to the church.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so
that's why kids on movies and stuff, they can only be on camera for 8 hours and they have to have,
How much, Chloe problems, this marriage falling apart, how much more juice do you think there is in the Kardashians as, because this phenomenon has gone on longer than I ever thought it would.
Because I think that girls like them, I think they're obsessed with them. I personally like the Kardashians because I'm a curvy girl like Kim, and I don't feel so disgusting because she goes out and she has big boobs and a big butt, and I'm like, you know what? I look like that. I should not be so embarrassed and be, like, emaciated all the time. And, like, I feel like even though they're all, like, they're gorgeous, they're funny. I mean, I watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Kill me, sue me. Don't kill me, sue me. But
claims court.
Even though they're like, even though they kind of live these lives that are not real, they seem like real girls, and I think that's why people relate to them so much.
So they're just illusional.
Yeah, they're like, you know what? We're in fucking Hollywood and we're loaded down, but whatever. I'm not. I don't weigh 2 pounds, and I'm not going to pretend to be something I'm not. I'm just going to be myself and fuck everybody, and that's why I think everybody loves them.
Okay, fair enough.
Still not watching.
It's okay.
Okay. I'm not the target demographic, so.
Yeah, you're not the demo. It's fine. No. I mean, listen, it's funny because, like, sometimes I'll watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians, but most of the time, most of what I watch is ESPN.
Interesting.
And KTLA Morning News, and that's pretty much what I watch.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I listen to NPR, and that's it.
I watch a lot of MSNBC. Probably
I don't.
Too much.
I don't.
Ronan Farrow officially got his show, so
yeah,
I'm...
I know.
Who did?
Ronan Farrow. The daughter of Mia Farrow and Woody Allen / Frank Sinatra.
The one that's supposed to be Frank Sinatra, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He looks a lot like Frank Sinatra.
He looks exactly like Frank Sinatra.
His story. He was a Rhodes Scholar. He was a child prodigy. He graduated law school by, like, age 18.
You're kidding.
No, he's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Worked as a
Is he single?
He's single. He's 25 years old.
Oh, he's 25. He's too young.
Yeah, he works for...
And even though I'm banging a 24-year-old right now, 25 is too young.
Show off.
I
25, that's your line?
Well, no. Actually, my line is 28.
Line that, up
I don't,
or down.
I don't want to date any younger than 28.
Okay. I don't want to date any older than 28. Sorry, Andrew Marchant.
I recently ended up dating a lot of 21-year-olds. Not by...
Well, was it terrible? Was it terrible? But is it different with girls than it is with guys? Because with guys, it's amazing.
I dated 2 21-year-olds recently. And I didn't know they were 21 when I met them.
You
I
didn't card them?
Bar,
right.
You don't take their wallet and look when they're in the bathroom?
One... God bless her, she was not the brightest bulb, and she was only interested in drinking and partying, and she exhausted me.
Oh, yeah.
The other one was much more with it. She was just very green. She wasn't, like, she wasn't a party girl personality. Like
she was 21.
She was 21. She was green, right. And she would say things about being 21, and I'm like, oh, you don't know.
Yeah, well, that's what I have. That's the only thing that I experienced with a 24-year-old. I'm like, he'll say things, and I'll go, you don't know yet. And he's like, yes, I do. I know everything. And I'm like, no, you don't.
Now, before we wrap up, I always like to throw in one weird topic right at the end here. And well, let me ask you a simple question first, Sharon. Would you want to know when you were going to die? Would you, if someone could tell
it's
you
not
the
a simple
exact
question.
Myth,
that's not simple at all.
Yes or no. Would you want to know?
Yes.
You would? Okay.
Yeah.
Fuck no.
Well, there is a company that has created the Death Watch.
What?
Ticker is a watch that counts down the years, months, days, hours, and seconds remaining until your death.
How can they predict that?
To land on this date, you'll fill out a health-related questionnaire, subtract your current age from the results you get, and just like that, the countdown begins.
It's a Cosmo
test. Holy shit, that's amazing.
Every time you glance at your wrist, you'll see a constant reminder of your mortality and the fleeting time you have left. Their goal is, and I imagine this is the same reason you'd want to know, to remind you to make the most of life and achieve happiness.
That would only give me total anxiety.
Oh, yeah, same here. That's
oh, I would just drink it all away and be like,
oh,
nah,
me too.
Nah,
I'd be like, I only got 45 days yet. Fuck it. But here's the thing. So that's interesting.
It's a bullshit formula. It's a scam.
Well, the thing is like you can put in all your health information, but they can't really factor in your genetics.
Right.
They also can't factor in if you get hit by a bus.
Yeah, exactly. There, ticker says you have another 45 years left. Sorry.
Right.
Now the other thing that I want to know about.
You just got John Hammed.
Let's say I get the get this watch, and it says I'm gonna die in like 40 years, and then all of a sudden, watch countdown, I'm still alive. I want my money back.
Hey, go find them. Go find
them. How much is it to get
You know what?
Is there like a yearly subscription that you pay, or is it a one-time?
If I were them, I'd have a yearly subscription.
Me too, yeah.
It's a one-time thing.
Really?
I don't have the exact
Hey, Will, I got some real estate on the moon to sell you while we're at it.
Well, I wouldn't get this watch. I don't wear a regular wristwatch. And it also works as a regular watch.
If everyone wants to get Will a birthday present,
okay,
ticker.
This is why I think you're Jewish. You're like, it also works as a regular watch. Because you can...
That's a value add.
It's
yeah.
a value add.
And my watch
Oh, my
makes
God,
phone
I dated
calls.
A guy that said that all the time.
He
was like
he
a high-powered... No, he
.
Was lovely, but a high-powered executive. He always goes, it's a value add. And I'd be like, I'm not your colleague. Shut the fuck
I am
up.
Sitting here in a suit.
Yeah, well, he's... Oh, you are. Yes. But, I mean, he would always say value add. Anyway.
Well, I mean...
What do you do?
I'm not going to say.
All right.
They don't even know my real name.
Oh. your real name's not Sean David?
We'll talk later.
All right.
I'll talk right after. That is his name, but there's more to it. The,
Italian.
John David Goldberg. That's what it is.
No, Sean we have David a Goldberg, Goldberg on next week.
Right, okay.
But, anyway, yeah, I wouldn't get this thing. And yeah, you need to be a regular watch to what I'm just going to have a ticking thing of death on my hand.
Well, it's funny because the boy that I'm dating right now or seeing, I don't know what we're doing, but he's a paramedic. And he left his watch at my house one night, and I was like, and so I returned it, and I was like, who wears a watch anymore? And he goes, someone who has to take people's pulses. And I was like, oh.
You know what?
It's like doctors have pagers. Only drug dealers and doctors have pagers.
Right.
By the way, just wait a couple months. This will be an app on your iPhone.
Yeah.
So... Don't get the watch. Don't
oh,
get
good?
The
so we
watch.
Should hold out?
Yeah.
But I may be dead by then.
Well, what if there's an app right now? I bet we could search and find it.
And that makes for good podcasting. Hold on, everyone.
Well, Sharon.
What?
That's about it.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. I'm so glad I came. And thanks for the Fireball whiskey.
Before we go, tell everybody once again.
Oh,
how they can find all your stuff.
Okay, you can find me at iamsharonhouston.com. And one thing I forgot to plug, which I'm really excited about, is I got invited to perform at the KCRW Masquerade Ball again.
Nice.
So it's on October 26th. Tickets are very expensive, but it's worth it because it's the best Halloween party ever. October 26th, go to kcrw.com/masquerade to buy tickets. And Dave Sitek from TV on the Radio is doing a DJ set. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is doing a DJ set. Glasser's
is that what he's
performing.
Doing? He's not going into the family business
no,
and
no,
driving
no, it's,
in circles?
It's a band, it's a band from Michigan. It's Dale Earnhardt Jr.
I've actually heard of them.
Oh, it's not the actual
no,
Junior
amazing.
Junior?
No, you would love them. They're great. They're from Detroit. They're amazing.
Well,
it's
Detroit.
Like you would love them. They're great. Two dudes, amazing. So they're doing a DJ set. All my favorite KCRW DJs, with the exception of Anthony Valdez, he's not doing a DJ set, but like Jeremy Soule, Ann Litt, Liza Richardson is going to be amazing.
That sounds like a great event.
It's great.
But you got to put on a costume. It's a Halloween thing.
You have to, because everybody, like, they don't fuck around with costumes there. But there's food trucks. There's music. There's
food trucks? Only I can go somewhere in LA to get a food
truck. It's at the Park
Plaza
Hotel. No, I'm telling you right now, it's one of the I did it last year. I went last year. It was the first time I was invited to tell a story. It was one of the greatest nights of my life.
And will
ever.
Information for this be up on the I Am Sharon Houston?
Yes, I will put links to buy tickets on my site.
And also you tweet about all this stuff, too.
All the
and
time.
How can they follow
you? On Twitter, it's @Sharon_Houston, H-O-U-S-T-O-N, like the city. But on Instagram, I'm @Sharon_Houston, no underscore. But on Twitter, Sharon_Houston.
Okay. But we could just link everything from your site as well.
Yeah. You go to my site and you can click on whatever and you
and
get
follow
it.
Follow her on Twitter. I do, so you should.
I mean, I don't tweet a lot, so I won't be annoying.
I feel like you weren't, and this, again, makes wonderful podcasting. I feel like you were tweeting a lot, and then you weren't tweeting a lot.
That's true. I go through phases. I tweet a lot, and then I don't tweet.
You're manic. Tweeting.
I'm a manic tweeter, yeah.
I tweet every day.
Manic pixie tweet
girl. You do? I don't.
I tweet every day.
I will go several days maybe without tweeting, and then I just have...
A shit ton of tweets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sean, if they want to read those tweets...
Follow me at TheSeanDavid. You can also like my page on Facebook, and you can get my book on Amazon Kindle, Triumvirs, TRIUMVIRS, and I would hope that you would read that book as well. I don't have anything...
What's the book about?
It's a collection of short stories.
Oh.
Yeah, all fiction, none of them having to do with my own fictional existence.
Nice.
And I don't think I have anything else coming up right now, so that's it. Yeah, and I'm That's it.
Okay. You can follow me at The Real Will Link. You can also read articles, film reviews of mine on the website u1can.com. Can spelled like the city in France. And I will be performing October 25th at the Pez Show.
Which is a great show, everybody.
Great essay show hosted by Alex Alexander. It's at the Actors Comedy Studio. And I found out that a couple of former podcast guests, which only means we've really gone through a lot of storytellers on this show, will also be performing with me that night. Michael Patrick Duggan.
Love.
And Alex Stein.
Asshole.
Love.
No, he's wonderful. I love him.
I love him.
Yeah. Who is all... Alex Stein's great on Twitter, too, by the
yes.
way.
Yes.
They'll be performing at that show, too. So this is going to be a lot of fun. So come on down there October 25th.
And they have free appetizers and food and cocktails.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And Pez dispensers.
Oh, it's
yes.
so great.
Yeah. It's good. It's a great show.
And then Sit
will
and Spin.
Will Joan Rivers be performing?
Sit and Spin. This will be up already.
Oh, no.
After I've done, but I plugged it on previous.
All right. Okay.
So people know. I did Sit
They have Sat and Span by this point.
Oh, they've Sat and Span.
Last night I did Sit and Spin, and it was the greatest performance anyone
That's
ever
it.
Saw.
They actually,
world.
First time ever that they've demanded an encore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I whipped out a whole new story.
It was like when Haydn performed his first 96th Symphony in London.
Now watch. I'm going to fucking bomb tomorrow. Yeah. I'm going to bomb.
You're not going to bomb.
On the show next week, very excited, I believe you know this person, Nat Goldberg.
I love Nat Goldberg!
Nat Goldberg and Sean Casey are coming on to talk about the Westcast Network, their podcast network.
Yeah, their new podcast network, yeah.
Which we're very excited to talk to them about that.
I'm very upset we're going to have two Seans. I don't like it. I'm saying it right now, two Seans.
I never met Sean, but I like Nat Goldberg.
Two Seans is going to be a nightmare.
Have we ever had a double Sean?
Why doesn't she bring Tushar instead of having Sean? Tushar Singh.
She's bringing Sean Casey.
Well, that's bullshit.
Well, you take it up with her.
We're going to...
I'll tweet
strong
her.
Words,
I'll send her a Facebook
message. We're starting,
what the hell?
Comedy feud.
It's all right.
Yeah. West Side, East Side, Hancock Park versus...
I know, right?
Yeah.
And then the week after that, we're very excited to have Ellie Araza.
Areza. I even spelled it for you phonetically.
I screw up the guests' names all the time. Ellie Areza. She is terrific. She's in a band called Pie, and she's also a terrific actress who was just on the season of The Bridge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're going to talk to her about all of that.
We're going to get all the Damien Bashir and Diane Kruger dirt. And what's his name? Buffalo Bill.
Ted Levine.
I love Diane Kruger.
Diane Kruger's great, great.
She's
so we can
amazing.
Find out if, like, when the camera stops rolling, she starts screaming in German.
Diane Kruger?
Yeah.
Oh, I love her. She was amazing in that Quentin Tarantino movie.
Inglourious Basterds.
Yes, Inglourious Basterds. She was fucking
genius. She was also
genius.
Terrible as Helen of Troy in Troy.
I didn't see that.
You didn't miss anything.
Wasn't her finest work.
Well, it was her first work. She was just a model before that.
Well, there you go.
She was a model before that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why she's so gorgeous.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, thank you once more.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for the booze.
You are very welcome. And for the Will Sean podcast, I'm Sean David.
I'm Will Link.
And we're finished.
We're finished.